Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. Now, we are a week away from the end of this month of March, and I'm not even going to lie, Sports City, this month flew by. Like we're at the 24th day of March, March 24th, 2016. Peyton Manning turns 40 years old today. Happy birthday to Gino Auriemma. I mean, I'm from the state of Connecticut. I ain't no Husky fan. People know I'm a Tennessee girls fan. They'll come to Tennessee basketball. I like that. But I might switch it. I don't know. I'm joking around. But there's a lot of stuff going on around ball, college basketball, March Madness. This is where the real tears start flying, people. Sweet 16. Don't nobody want to go home. Don't nobody want to go home. So y'all just settle on in. We're going to get to everything as much as possible. We're going to hit dishes that people don't even talk about, like the bottom feeders in both of those Western Conference situations. I want to talk about it because everybody's jumping around. I mean, this is just that extravaganza. Outside of December, I'm a December boy. It's the most wonderful time of the year. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside the kitchen. Timeless is alive.
New York, Jersey, Philly, Baltimore, D.C., Virginia, Atlanta, everybody rock!
Okay, he said right now. The call number is 917-889-9592. You got the next 90 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but y'all are here with the chefs. Thank you to everybody that's been checking us out, downloading us, giving us that view, that love, that look, coming in here, getting that food for thought. Y'all know y'all been taking them dishes home and been talking about it. I've actually been seeing stuff come through our email, too. Y'all keep hitting that Gmail up. SportsCityChefs@gmail.com. I love the questions that I'm getting. I love it. But I'm going to keep doing what we do unless y'all come up with something interesting either here in the chat room or also in the email to let me see what's going on, Sports City. I'm locked and loaded. I'm ready to go. I got my big brother here, Arkeezy, a.k.a. Mr. King. Welcome to the cafe. How are you feeling this evening?
Feeling real good, Thomas, man. Ready to do what we do. We got some games on tap, like you mentioned, man, in the men's tournament. I'm interested in somebody tweeting out there, keeping me posted on that Texas A&M Oklahoma game. I'm heavily invested in the young boy Buddy Hill. You know what I'm saying? I want to see him in Philadelphia, but that's neither here nor there right now, man. We came to do what we do right here inside Sports City on the Crossover Cafe Master Chef Edition. So let's get it cracking, bro.
Okay, well, we're going to start right there. Since you said that's not neither here nor there, but we're going to be right there. We're going to go right there. Are we going to go right there? Philly, I want to talk about the Philadelphia 76ers. Not in depth. I'm not even going to go in about Philly. But they had a game in hand up against the Denver Nuggets, and Moutier with the shot from Alaska. Oh, man. Now, I already had a heartbreaker about a few weeks ago when Steph Curry hit that shot up against Oklahoma City. Here goes another one, but he's falling away. Really look discombobulated and knocked down the shot. It's like Philly can't even, beg for a win. Like, that was a win that they should have had in the bag. Basically, everybody keep their hands up. Don't touch him, And he still knocked down a very tough three. Your thoughts on the game where Denver actually won by one. They were down by two. Moutier shoots a half-court three and hits it. I mean, and these things happen. It's just the aura of basketball. I think it's just the mystique of March where everybody's aura is just picked up. Nobody wants to lose. Everybody has that never-say-die attitude. I mean, I've seen that shot. It just is like, wow. Just hearing every analyst and sportcaster just speak out about, Philadelphia and what they are trying to do with trying to get some belief in the team. And I feel they are. And, they've been dealing with injury for the past couple of seasons. They have a couple of bigs to be noted. and I don't really know where the immediate fix would be for these guys to turn it around looking at the next season. But your thoughts at least on this shot with Denver winning late 102-101.
Yeah. And part of my correction, I want to say it was 104-103 was final after he hit the it was some free throws there by Philly. And then Moutier hits the three, so 104-103. But, yeah, it was just really the shot, Thomas. I mean, right now, the Philadelphia 76ers, you know, they're not the story. It was a game that they had, obviously, in hand. At least we thought they did in terms of viewing it. But as you mentioned, man, March Madness is alive and it affects everyone. And so could you imagine had Moutier been in the tournament, he probably would have made a big shot last night for his team or maybe tonight, because that's who this is really about right now, what he did for Denver, 42 minutes, Thomas, a double-double, 27 points, 11 boards, 4 assists with the block, 3 made three-pointers. And this is a guy that, you know, many feel like, you know, he's still got a lot of work to do on this shot, and I would agree he does, but the defenses are a little softer at this point in the season, but that has nothing to do with your shot-making ability. You have to still have the confidence, the mechanics, the follow-through, the belief in self, and all of that to get the shot up and get it to go down. And that's what he did. He shot 10 of 23 for about like 44%, if you round up, basically, 80% from the line. He was 4 or 5 there. And the miraculous shot. I mean, basically, the question is, do you believe in miracles? And if you didn't, Emmanuel Moutier's made shot last night to beat the buzzer was enough to let you know that miracles are real and miracles do happen. Thomas, this young man was jumping sideways, okay? He didn't fade away, you know, backwards. He wasn't pulling back. I mean, we all practiced the fadeaway, but sideways he jumped to his left. He stayed falling to the left in the direction of the scorer's table. The basket is back towards the right, and he makes it. A guy who's not known for being a great shooter, who for the season is only shooting 36% from the field and 66% from the free throw line. So it's not like he's, you know, having a Steph Curry type of season, or hell, he's not even Rodney Hood at 41% for the season, okay? He's shooting 35. He's down there with guys like Ricky Rubio, okay, Isaiah Cannon. I mean, guys who are just absolutely atrocious, man, when it comes to their field goal percentage. But it was his night. He was the story. Great shot for him. Hopefully what we're seeing out in Denver and with this young man's development along with their young bigs there in Denver, you know, we'll have a lot more to talk about when it comes to the Denver Nuggets. Next season, provided they make some key acquisitions during free agency and draft well and begin their rebuild. But again, to touch on Philly's rebuild, Thomas, I just mentioned it, man. I'm not saying Buddy Hield is the answer for everything that might be wrong with Philadelphia, but I think he could be a key cog, a key piece on that perimeter. Some people are thinking, you know, for whatever reason, I don't know why you're thinking it, that his game won't translate to the NBA, but I absolutely believe his game will translate to the NBA, given the rules, you know, on the perimeter, his ability and his propensity to attack the basket, get to the rim. He's a quality free throw shooter. He has a quality jump shot that's reliable. I like this kid. Philly needs Buddy Hield.
And what would be crazy is if Philly went after another big. Just picture if they went after another big. When they didn't need a big man,
don't
they went
do
after
it.
A big man. Right.
Yeah, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. We can't afford it. We can't. Philadelphia, look, listen, as you know me, man. You know that's the team that I grew up on. 15 minutes, Wilmington, Delaware to Philadelphia, 15 minutes. I'm there. It would be the biggest mistake, you know, in the history of the franchise, given its current condition. I mean, how much worse can you do? I mean, we're synonymous right now, you know, what it is to be a perennial loser, a perennial tanker. That is not what I grew up on. That is not what introduced me to the game. It was Dr. J. It was, you know, Mo Cheeks. Before Moses Malone, you know, there was Caldwell Jones and Bobby Jones and Andrew Tony. How could I forget? I love that, you know, that man. You know what I'm saying? I idolized those dudes, man. Like, they put me on to the game of basketball. That's why I'm so passionate about it now. Even though they weren't bringing home all the rings that we may have expected as Philly fans, they were always in the hunt. They were always there. It was Boston, it was L.A., it was Philadelphia. Like, those were the three kings when I was being introduced to the game of basketball in the mid to late 70s there, Thomas. So we just got to get back to some winning ways, man, and competing. And it's all about the construction of the roster and the organization's belief in the team and the ability to win. So Philly fans, anybody in the GM, everybody, come on, man. Let's get it right. Let's get it right. Let's go. Next topic. I'm getting emotional.
I didn't want to dig. Like I said, I didn't want to dig into this pot and start going all around about Philly. But see, that's how adamant, you know, chefs get in his kitchen about their team, man. I know. I try my best to stay away from the Thunder. I try because I know how I'm going to be. I know how I'm going to end up. You already see how it blew up last week with the Knicks. You know what I'm saying? So I try my best.
Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to see how you felt about that shot. Just like you said it, he was fading away left from half court with people around him. But people, I was like, are you serious? Like, and I had the score wrong. It was 104-103. I had the score wrong. Still yet, I knew he needed the three to win, two to tie, and he only had like a second to make that shot, and he knocked it down. I was like, are you kidding? And then just looking at, you know, Philly, like, man, we had this game, and they snatched it from him. And then I didn't even want to get into, you know, the yesteryear situation and you know, where your life, you know, your livelihood or liking toward this team came from. I just knew that this was something that would probably be under your skin, just like the Golden State situation happened with the Thunder. So I just had to start there. Especially why you went to Philadelphia. That's why I threw that out there. Now, let me get into this show, because we got a lot of stuff to talk about, especially here in the NBA. Even though I do like what's going on in college basketball, Sweet 16, like I said, this is where the tears come out, and Gino's birthday is today too. I can't even talk. I had a discussion about Gino Auriemma today. I was like, man, if he wins another national title with this UConn team, force him out of women's basketball. Just force him out, because ain't nobody going to beat him. Ain't nobody going to beat him. Okay. I mean, back to back undefeated season. What else you need to see? What else you need to see? I don't know. Okay, I'm getting away from it. Now, I'm actually including Curry in this discussion, even though everybody's already hands down, flat out shoo-in giving it to Curry. But I want to include this year, or I want to call this year the year of the point guard, because you also have CP3, who's actually been manning the ship while Blake has been out since near Christmas. And then, well, I tell y'all I don't want to talk about my team. I tell y'all that I'm kind of scarce talking about the Thunder. But I can't sit here and talk basketball and not talk about Russell Westbrook. This is the same dude from last year that got kicked in the face and had a hole in his face. Y'all remember that? Y'all remember that? He put the mask on, and the first day with the mask on, he had a triple-double, and he scored 49 points with a triple-double. I mean, this is why he still had a hole in the side of his face, people. Well, Russell Westbrook is back in that conversation, people. Putting up triple-doubles in the month of March. The last time we've seen this many triple-doubles in 1 month, Larry Bird and Michael Jordan did it back in the 80s. He is on a four-game triple-double streak. Four games. Yeah, and then people look at the Thunder and they say, well, it's just KD and Russ. He's still getting the ball to other people on the team. How's he getting it done? They're still third in the West, where there's a lot of competition out there. So that's why I throw these guards together. That's why I say the year of the guard, because you got Curry, who's probably likely going to be the MVP. You got CP3 doing work as much as possible, holding that Clipper team in the fourth spot right now without Blake. And you got Russ. I mean, and you can go either or, too. I could actually include KD if you want, but I just went with point guards for now, because KD's having an awesome season, and it's like these guys are kind of treading on the same, you know, light, if you will, KD and Russ. Russ doing his thing at the point guard position, KD doing his thing at the three, and Donovan getting it to mesh. And we could, you could include KD if you want, Royce. I set this up as the point guard situation, the year of the guard. That's how I wrote this. Your thoughts on all three of the guards, and you can take your time on it, do as you must, in any order you would like, CP3, Curry, Russ, however you want to go, 1, 2, 3, if you don't have it, 1, 2, however you want. But the year of the point guard.
Well, you know, I like that. Let's just start with the point guards, man, and keep it there. We won't talk Kevin Durant and throw him in. And I noticed those point guards are pretty much out in the Western Conference. And, you know, their teams are right there, you know, leading the way, Golden State, OKC, and the Clippers, minus, you know, the San Antonio Spurs, who are actually sitting number two in the Western Conference. And Tony Parker really hasn't been much to talk about these days as a point guard. He's not putting up ridiculous numbers. But, Thomas, I will say that in the last 7 days, over the last four games, Tony Parker's probably been the most efficient from the field recently, shooting 46%, but he's only doing like 12-9. That will pretty much conclude that in terms of that fourth team in the top of the Western Conference, which brings me to the team sitting number four, the Los Angeles Clippers, and Chris Paul, timeless. You know, CP3's having an outstanding season. I mean, pretty much putting up, 20 points, 10 assists, 2 steals, 4 boards, 2 threes, and 33 minutes of action. And recently, however, his last 3 games, he's 36% from the field, 21 points, 9 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 steals, 2 threes, 9 free throw attempts per game, shooting 85%. So, this guy has had a great career. Chris Paul, he's obviously one of the better floor generals in terms of running a team. He's a pass-first kind of guy. He's going to defer most times to his teammates and utilize his weapons. He's not just going to key in on one person on his team. He does it. You know, it's not just a dynamic duo, if you will, of Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. It's really a Clippers team. You got people to worry about. You got some guys who have the ability to create offense for themselves, and Jamal Crawford. You have a catch-and-shoot guy who's just worked extremely hard and gotten better, and J.J. Redick. You got a guy who has little or no offense whatsoever in terms of post moves in DeAndre Jordan, but he's shooting a ridiculous, like, 70% from the field because all he does is catch lob dunks. And everybody else, you know, CP3 makes them – relative or helps them contribute on the offensive end. He's just a great player, man. I mean, it's not enough, I guess, superlative to describe him. He's still a dirty player at times. We talked about that in a recent show and some of the things that he does and, you know, where you draw the line in terms of competing to get that win. So, you know, I take a little bit of issue there. So, I couldn't hit him with that leadership label that a lot of people say Chris Paul is one of the best leaders in the league. And maybe when it comes to purely, you know, basketball, when it's about just basketball, that may be true. But when it's about basketball, which to me always still includes your emotions and how you handle the heat of the moment, you know, if you're willing to cross that line in terms of, you know, manhood, I got to question your leadership because that's not – I mean, look, it's still a game. It's still just basketball. It's not the realities of war, if you will. It's not the realities of being a real soldier where people really do take up arms and they defend their country and its liberties and things of that nature. So, you know, you can sometimes draw that analogy or comparison, but don't get it twisted. It's basketball. So – that being said, you know, Chris Paul is still a great player, man. He's, you know, he's doing this. Russell Westbrook, what can you say? Relatively, you know, most times an efficient guy on most nights and during the season. He's averaging 24 and 11, Thomas, with 8 boards, 2 steals, 1.3 three-pointers, and those are stupid numbers, for a guy who was once labeled a shoot first guy. He doesn't pass. What's wrong with him? He doesn't defer to Kevin Durant enough. But let's give some credit to Kevin Durant. Let's give some credit to Scott Brooks and that coaching staff that had Russell in those formative years of his career before Donovan came in this season and inherited really a guy who had just started to figure it all out last year. And now he's beginning to, show his master's degree type work, if you will, averaging a triple-double over the last 3 games, 18 points, 13 assists, 12.7 to be exact in terms of rebounds, but that's 18, 13, and 13 with the steal and 2 made 3-pointers. That is stupid, okay? That just makes no sense, but it's one of the reasons why he's arguably the best point guard in the world, best point guard in the NBA right now because of what he does on both ends of the floor. He's not known for killing you with the three. He's just known for killing you, period, by any means necessary. If he has to make the three, he can be clutch and make it. If he needs to, hit you with that pull-up jumper at the elbow from the free throw line, he'll do that. If he needs to blow by you and get a layup, he'll do that. If he needs to blow by you, dunk on you, get the and-one, and go to the free throw line, he'll do that. If he needs to draw the attention, lob it to Adams or Cantor, he'll do that. If he needs to draw attention, post up, kick it out of the post to an open KD, he'll do that. Wait a second. How many times did I just say Russell Westbrook, he'll do that? Timeless. This is no longer the guy that people used to talk about who would only shoot, and wouldn't do that, wouldn't do what needed to be done for his team to be better, to win and excel and get everybody else involved. That's the growth. That's the evolution of Russell Westbrook. That's why everyone loves him so much now. I think he's still going to have some diehard haters out there, Thomas, but, it's hard to not love what you're seeing out of Russell Westbrook. And if Stephen Curry did not exist, if he was not the player that he is today, it'd be all about Russell, hands down, all about Russell. But there's one person whose star is shining brighter than them all, than the rest, and that's Steph Curry, man. The dude, his ball handling, his shot-making ability, it's ridiculous. His confidence in himself, even though he turns the ball over like any superstar will at a high level sometimes, he gets a pass because so many people look at him and say, he's an average size, looking guy, and, we fall in love with the commonality, but he's elite. He's leveled the playing field, if you will, with his shot-making ability, the quick release, penetration, having court vision. And he stepped up his game, even on the defensive end. I don't think we talk about that enough, Thomas. He's not a great defender just yet. He's not locked down in terms of one-on-one, put him on an island. Unfortunately, I want to say I heard someone attempt to slight Mark Jackson, and how they felt like Mark Jackson was always trying to hide Steph Curry. Well, let me remind anyone that when Mark Jackson had Steph Curry was dealing with ankle injuries, and Mark needed to hide Steph Curry for the sake of his health, especially on that defensive end, because oftentimes, that's where you get hurt. You get hurt on D. That's where you do the most work, trying to anticipate where a guy is going to go and beating to a spot. And, Steph's ankles were very, very tender most of that tenure under Mark Jackson. So what Steve Kerr has inherited is a guy who's gotten past his injuries, whose confidence has grown, whose body has developed. His time has come in terms of his prime, mind, body, and soul game all coming together to the point where he is, hands down, right now, the two-time league MVP. That's what should happen, you know, because Steph Curry is running away with the league, man. I mean, he's carrying the league on his shoulders, man, and on his back. So, totally impressed. Everybody knows Steph Curry's numbers, man. I mean, should I even go through it? I guess I will because I did everybody else's. He's averaging 30 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 steals, and a ridiculous 5 made three-pointers a game. Who the hell averages 5 whole threes a game? I've never ever seen that, Thomas, and I feel like I'm telling lies just by saying it. Yeah, Steph Curry's averaging 5 threes a game. It sounds like a lot. 2 or 3, okay, but 5, stop playing. But that's the reality of how good this young man is, how confident he is in his shot. His team is confident, the franchise, the whole world, everybody nowadays expects when Steph Curry throws it up, it's going in. And when it doesn't, he's like, oh, he missed. Okay, he is a human being. So that's what you got. If there's one other point guard, Thomas, I feel like I would have to just throw out there, and he just doesn't have the help. He doesn't have the team. He's not in the Western Conference. But he's a point guard, man, in terms of, you know, the points, the assists, the steals, the rebounds. You know, his numbers are similar to others at times, and that's John Wall. You know, I feel for this guy. You know, he came into the league and he struggled early on, you know, getting healthy, getting his shot right. You know, kudos to Sam Cassell, who put in a lot of work with John Wall and helping him become a reliable mid-range shooter. But 20 points, 10 assists, 5 boards, 2 steals, 1.5 threes. Well, there was a time where you was like, man, this guy is never going to average a made three-pointer a game. He's at 1.5, almost 2. So, you know, it's just unfortunate that Wizards team has kind of imploded, been derailed by health injuries, and, you know, it just not enough talent, I guess you could say, to go around in the league in terms of that's reliable and can play at that high level as everybody else, and they're scrapping and fighting to try to get into the Eastern Conference playoffs. But, you know, honorable mention to John Wall and what he's been doing this season.
Okay. And the reason why I didn't put Wall in, because Wall is having some exciting numbers, but these guys are on the outside looking in. And I guess I wanted to keep it relevant. But we can look at all of the point guards that have played great and you throw them in there. I mean, we can even throw Kyrie in there, but just like you threw him with the Wizards situation, Kyrie's also been injured too. And, you know, trying to keep that removed from the point guard that have been giving it their all for the, you know, the duration of the season with the three guys that I've mentioned. Now, I'm going to go in order with the three of them. If you want to elaborate or throw more in a dish, you can. But I'm going to go in order. Curry leads, you know, with his team out of the gate. I mean, this is crazy that they're already pressing for the 72. They're 64-7. They have what? 11 games left. They have 11 games left if you look at this like that. I don't know how this may end up panning out for them. He's shooting the ball at a ridiculous clip. And that's his skill set. I mean, he'd rather shoot the three. But this is what actually makes me question the way that they defend him. I'd force him to dribble. I'd force him to the lane. I don't want him to get his shot going. I want him to throw that shot up when he's cold. Like, people settle for leaving Steph open or letting him get those double screens. Like, the Spurs actually had a great deal of putting bodies on him, making sure that he sees a guy, regardless if it was a big or not. But he's been able to knock down his shot in front of some of these bigs with confidence or not. I mean, this is the ridiculous thing about Steph Curry. And he's still able to get, what, 7 assists out of this team where he has scores all around him. I mean, this is the one point guard that you see score first that you don't question it. Like, these are the days of, like, the Stephon Marbury's or when Iverson was running the one at one point and was scoring. You know what I'm saying? The people, like, they got to try and get the team involved. Steph is scoring at a clip that they don't even worry about what the rest of the team is doing. Beat them. Beat them. Seven teams have done it. So if you can't stop them, it's working. And I think Steve Kerr, being a shooter, he loves to see this happen. So everybody's struggling on worrying about what Steph is going to do. As soon as you guys try to, you know, collapse on him, you got Draymond on the perimeter, you got Clay, you got guys coming off the bench, and Barbosa, who believes in their shot. I mean, this team is loaded. around with the madness that Steph has been doing up until this point, until their 71st game. Then I go to the Russell Westbrook situation. I'm gonna try and be as brief as possible with Russ. I had it wrong. Some reason the numbers are off for me. I'm all over the place, so forgive me. He's on his third triple double as of the last game they played up against the Houston Rockets. He could potentially get his fourth. If he gets his fourth triple double in this game up against the Jazz tonight, he will include himself in the company. Listen to this. I hope you're ready. In the likes of Oscar Robertson, Wilt Chamberlain, and Magic Johnson, the only other players in NBA history to have a streak of four straight triple-doubles in two different instances. Magic has done it twice. Wilt's done it four times. The Big O has done it seven. Russell has done this once, and that was as of last year. If he could pull it off tonight, he'll put himself right in notch with Magic Johnson. Now, I mean, I could go on and on about Russ, but I'm probably the biggest advocate, biggest fan that people have seen about Russ. And I was there when people were picking on Russ, and I was still, rooting for Russ. So just to see him evolve and turn into this guy that's actually trying to move the ball, get everybody involved while the team is still in question. People still have their questions about the Thunder, and I don't blame them. And Russ is still able to have this type of play with this team besides the defense that he brings. Everybody's talking about the offense. He plays great defense at the point guard position, probably the best on-the-ball defender at the point guard position, probably better all-around point guard. I like that. In the Chris Paul situation, this is what concerns me about Chris Paul. All of the work that Chris Paul is doing right now, he is coming up on the age of, 31? You guys are going to end up burning this boy out, man. That's the one thing I'm worried about. He's doing – because Chris Paul don't like – I think everybody don't like losing. I can really just say it like that. But you can tell Chris Paul with his emotions on his sleeve, wills his team every time as much as possible. He put the difference that he had with J.J. Redick, and that actually works now. Like, these are a real big tandem together while they get it done. But I'm worried about how long they're waiting for this quad injury for Blake to get back out there. So he could, take some time off. I know he settles for throwing alley-oops to DeAndre. They're doing what works to get these games done at the end of the day. But I'm worried about, if they have somebody to come in at clutch points of the game, and let's just say Chris Paul gets in the foul trouble or is tired, do they believe in the backup point guard outside of Chris Paul? Like, these are the issues that the Clippers are going to have to be concerned with, let alone off the gate. They may potentially end up seeing the Grizzlies. And the Grizzlies are sitting up there waiting for Conley to get back. So Conley is trying to heal up and get back out there. But they've actually been getting it done from everybody outside of Conley and stuff like that. So the Grizzlies can act – they always play the Clippers tough. This is always that grindhouse, drag-em-out situation with the Grizzlies going up against the Clippers. So, is Chris Paul ready to go into that second season with, his wheels churning and him getting – I don't really want to say up in age, but – Father Time in his rearview mirror. You know what I'm saying? So these are the things that I'm worried about with Chris Paul. But other than that, the way that he's been able to just make the ball be scored, whether he's scoring it himself or feeding guys to get the ball in the goal, that's the ultimate goal at the end of the day. So looking at what Chris Paul's been able to do with this Clipper team, and they have a big-time matchup tonight up against the Portland Trail Blazers with him and Damian Lillard. And we could actually throw Lillard in there if we wanted to, but Lillard's at the bottom of the eight seeds in the Western Conference, but he's been playing – some electric basketball at the point guard position as well.
Well, Thomas, let me throw this at you and see if I can't help spice it up a little bit when we're talking about the Clippers and Chris Paul. And, I was starting to mention how a lot of people like to throw Chris Paul's name around as if it's synonymous with leadership. Okay, this team is 3-7 over its last 10 games, Thomas. They're the only team in the top four of that Western Conference that is not above 500 over the last 10. Problem, major problem. Let me tell you who they've beaten, Timeless. The Dallas Mavericks back on March 7th, the New York Knicks on March 11th, and the Houston Rockets on March 16th. Here's who they've taken a loss to. The Golden State Warriors on Wednesday, the 23rd. The Pelicans. How are you losing to the Pelicans? Okay. How are you losing to the Pelicans, the Memphis Grizzlies, okay, by 11? Okay, they don't have Mark Gasol or Mike Conley. You lost to the Spurs. Makes sense. You lost to the Cavaliers. Eh, I get it. You never know which Cavaliers team is going to show up. So you caught the 114-90 beatdown from LeBron. You lost to OKC, 120-108. Where you at? You need to stand up. And then you lost to the Atlanta Hawks, 107-97. I got a problem with them going 3-7 against those teams, because there are some wins that, you know, you still should have got. Maybe looking at that, I say, you know, 5-5 or 6-4. Clippers need to beat Atlanta. Okay. I can see you not beating OKC. And again, you never know which Cleveland team you get. I understand the loss to San Antonio, but you should absolutely get past Memphis with a bunch of unwanted guys that we talked about here on the show, and we made a case for how tough it would be to beat a team that has nothing to lose. You know, guys that are like, no one's counting on me, no one's, you know, game planning for me, and I have license to ill, if you will. And they just won out, and they did that. Lance Stevenson? Come on, man. Lance. Z-Bo goes crazy and puts a triple-double on his former Clipper team. People forget Z-Bo used to play for the Clippers. He went for 28-11 and 10. What? Z-Bo with a triple-double? Like, I know it's triple-double season, but Zach Randolph, really? You going to triple-double? You going to take that? You going to take that L? You know what I mean? You going to lose by double figures to the Grizzlies? Come on, man. You can't blame that on Blake not being present. You got to find a way to get that win. And then the Pelicans, really? Often injured Pelicans, no identity having New Orleans Pelicans. Anthony Davis will go out and miss the rest of the game if you breathe or look in his direction too hard. Ouch, my feelings hurt. I don't feel like playing tonight. God. What? Like, come on, man. How are you 3-7 over the last 10? 5-5, you got to do 500 or 6-4 if you're trying to send that message to the rest of the league and to those teams that are out in front. We're still here, and we're to be respected. You're starting to shape up and ship out and look like the type of squad that everyone has you pegged for. Good regular season record, ripe for the picking every postseason. Pretender. That's what you want to wear? That's your ID? Huh? Okay. That's the Clippers. I get it. I get it. I don't know how you feel about it, but that's how I'm starting to feel, Thomas, right here, right now. Yeah, early exit. Keep playing like that, early exit. Bottom line, you can't stick around. You can't win a chip playing that way. You can't. It's just impossible. How do you do that? Jekyll and Hyde? No, run and hide. That's what you do if you're a Clipper fan right now. You need to run and hide. Clipper fans should be embarrassed that this team just went 3-7 over the last 10 games, period.
That is true. That is true to look at. And it was interesting that they had an interview of Jamal Crawford and what he said about their past two experiences in the postseason and what they were able to do. The past two teams that won the NBA Finals were teams that they beat. They beat the San Antonio Spurs last season, even though two seasons ago they won it. And they also beat Golden State before Golden State got hot around Steve Kerr. When they had Mark Jackson, they were taking care of business. But I think it's a different Golden State Warrior team than what they've seen in the past. And this San Antonio Spurs team, I mean, they are so for real. It's like people are overlooking them because of the success that Golden State is having. Listen, I mean, Golden State, 64-7. Respect that, right? The San Antonio Spurs are 60-11. 60-11. The people are like, they're not even thinking about that record. They're thinking about what if the Warriors get over 72 wins. I want people to look at this. If the Spurs run out the door with this, the Spurs could push 73. Just think about that. Yeah. Oh, no. I got that wrong. No, they get 71. They missed it. 82. They would get 71. But they would touch 70 wins in the season. They would touch 70 wins. They go out of the door, even though I know, you know, Greg Popovich. Greg Popovich don't care. Greg Popovich will sit up there and rest Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Kawhi Leonard if he needed to, Tim Duncan, and still say, you know what? We'll still beat you. And then we'll win that game. So, you know, that's why I throw that out there. Now, the pretender situation with the Clippers, that's why I threw that situation, why they beaten the Spurs, they beaten the Warriors in previous postseasons. I could say they can contend. I don't know how much they have in the tank to get to an NBA final, especially while one of their superstars has been out for nearly 4 months now. It's almost 4 months since Blake has been gone. So it's not like he's going to come back on the floor and have it. He might surprise me. He might have it, you know, just snapping and you know, popping in the pan, if you will. But he's going to be rusty. And rusty in a mid-season effort. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's in mid-season condition. Everybody's loose, getting out there, doing what they need to do. Blake is going to have to chip off that rust as much as possible to be ready, one, i.e. for Zeebo. Two, if they get out the gate up against – Right. Two, if they get out the gate up against Zeebo, then they got the Warriors out the gate. I mean, the Warriors have been taking care of these guys left and right, so then you got that also. So this is an uphill climb for the Clippers unless they can catch the Thunder at the three spot and then make the Thunder have to deal with that type of, you know, climb at the postseason run. Then that's a different story. But I don't even say I feel comfortable calling them a pretender or contender. I feel like they could contend. I just don't know how much they have in the tank to go as far as the Western Conference Finals. Stop it.
Flashback alert popped in my head while you were talking about Blake and how long he's been out and coming back. Okay, take you back to the Orlando Magic team with Dwight Howard and Jameer Nelson. Jameer Nelson was having that all-star caliber season the first half of the season. He goes down with an injury, misses significant time. They bring in Rafer Austin, a.k.a. Skip DeMalu. He's manning the point. And, you know, they get past the Cavaliers out of the Eastern Conference Finals. And, you know, they're going to the finals to play the Lakers. But the Magic had already played the Los Angeles Lakers. They're scheduled two times during that season. And Jameer was killing the Lakers. I think he averaged like 26 points and 6 or 7 assists versus the Lakers that season. This dude is fresh off the injured list. You know what I'm saying? And you're trying to reinsert a point guard, okay, to your team when everybody's basically in fifth gear, man, fifth or sixth gear. Like, you're in the postseason. This is the finals. Everybody's on go mode. You can't catch up. He's not no Porsche type of player from 0 to 60 in 5 seconds or less. That is not Jameer Nelson. It didn't work. That decision ruined that opportunity to capture an NBA title for Van Gundy and Dwight Howard and those guys in the Magic. And I thought they really were a better team at that time. It didn't work out because of that. Similar situation, in my opinion, when you're talking Blake Griffin and the Clippers. He is so significant to what this team, you know, would need to make a real finals run. I'm talking get out of the Western Conference Finals. I mean, we always talking they got to get out the first round, get out the second round. Look, you got to get to the finals. You can't do that with Blake Griffin having missed so many games. And it not only was it the injury to his leg, the quad, and the muscle and all that, there's the hand situation. So we don't know what Blake looks like right now. Who he was the last time we saw him, we don't know if that Blake is still there. When are we going to see Blake again? And is it in the interest of this team to bring him back? Or does this team need to figure out how to continue to win? There was a stretch where they were winning and playing well and to the point where everybody was like, well, is this team better without Blake? I mean, you always want all your weapons loaded, you know what I'm saying? When you go to war, you want ammo loaded and ready to be, you know, put a good use. So, but that's not what you got with Blake Griffin. And that's not what they're going to have. It doesn't matter when he returns. He's not going to be ready, period. When he gets back, he's not ready because he's not going game speed. And when I say game speed, I don't care what kind of practice you do, you're not going postseason game speed physicality from an opposing player on the other team, somebody else who wants it desperately, okay? You're not simulating that in a Clippers practice facility. Sorry, I'm not buying it. It's not going to happen. Another blown opportunity for the Los Angeles Clippers. And we'll say that it's attributed once again to injury because it's just bad timing and a bad decision by Blake to, you know, hit the guy and break his hand when it looked like he was ready to, you know, get back on the court from that thigh injury. So, no, Thomas, man, we can't mix words, brother. Absolute pretender to this point. They had a great season. The record's going to be solid. You know, they're going to be X amount of games above 500. No, they're not getting that lucky to get past Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Golden State, and get to the finals. Hell no. Stop that. I ain't buying that. It's over.
No, I'm not pushing that.
They're as done as the Los Angeles Lakers, Phoenix Suns, and Minnesota Timberwolves. They might as well be one of the three teams at the bottom. That's how done they are.
Wow.
They just got a better record, but they're just as done as
them. Okay.
They're cooked.
Okay, I'm going to throw this last dish at you and we'll get away from this because I got stuff to get to, of course. Jamal Crawford says if they don't get to a Western Conference Final or NBA Finals, blow this up. Do you agree that they blow this up with everything that they just brought there? They just put this team together. They just put all of this together.
Whatever. Agree. Next topic.
Okay, the call the number is 517-889-9592. Just kick me right in the kitchen. Okay, so we got a lot of stuff to talk about, especially, you know what, I'm going, you call it, where it's east or west. You tell me which way I should go.
Let's talk east, man. Let's go east. Let's bring it to the east.
Okay.
When the east is in the house, oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Danger. Okay. I like that. He's getting me hyped up, people. He's getting me hyped up. Okay. First out of the gate, the Chicago Bulls and the Detroit Pistons. Who wants it, Royce? I'm going to ask you this. Now, they just got the likes of Jimmy Butler back. Jimmy Butler is being a key contributor. They're in an interesting fight again up against the Knicks where they lost at home up against the Knicks. They flew out yet last night to get in New York to play the Knicks today. Now they're fighting with the Pistons at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. Your thoughts on both teams trying to make this presence in the postseason?
Thomas, they want it. They want it. I was looking at that when we were talking about the West. Let's start with the Milwaukee Bucks real quick. They're out. Everybody from Milwaukee back doesn't have a chance. They have 42 losses so far this season already. It's over for them. The Wizards are sitting at 36 losses. The Bulls and the Pistons at 34 losses. The Pacers at 33. And then you have one, two, three, four teams that occupy the third to the sixth position in the Eastern Conference standings with 30 losses. So these teams won it because you look at their last 10 games, Hornets 8-2, Pacers 6-4, Pistons 7-3, Bulls 6-4, and the Wizards 5-5. Again, you have teams that are fighting, trying to claw their way into the postseason, and they're playing 500 or better ball. That makes for a great finish, a fantastic finish, if you will, and a race to the line. It's going to be a photo finish. Both teams won it. This is like familiar territory. Again, another flashback. Detroit, Chicago, think Isaiah and Bad Boys, Mike and Pippen trying to, you know, overcome the Bad Boys. I love it. This is not about, you know, rings right now, but this is about pride in your city, pride in your organization, and the Pistons, you know, returning to the postseason play, and they haven't been there in a while. And this is another feather. This would be another feather in the cap of one Stan Van Gundy coming in, you know, and taking over and putting on dual responsibilities there with the franchise in terms of coaching and you know, pulling the trigger on deals and trades and all that, GMing, if you will. So he's got talent there. I thought he made an outstanding deal to get Tobias Harris there. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is taking another step. We share the same birthday. Shout out to him, February 18th. You know how we do it, Aquarius, all day, every day. Reggie Jackson, you know how I feel about Reggie getting his opportunity to run his own team. Marcus Morris is getting the opportunity to be his own man there in Detroit. And Van Gundy's decided to unleash Andre Drummond. He's getting him the basketball. And Drummond's rewarding that team and that city, you know, by eating glass, getting tipping wins, pretty at the buzzer. If you really did that the other night, I witnessed that. I like this Pistons team's chances. It's just going to be important for them to not implode. And again, I mean, they're 7-3 over the last 10, so I think Van Gundy has them dialed in. And they've been fortunate for the most part to not have been snake bitten much by, you know, a rash of injuries, where the Chicago Bulls, Thomas, that's just been the story of the Chicago Bulls in recent seasons, whether it's Derrick Rose, whether it's Joakim Noah, whether it's Taj Gibson, now Paul Gasol, Jimmy Butler, you throw in the mix, Mike Dunleavy, he's always battled injuries for the most part in his career. Chicago may want it, but I just feel like they don't need it. I think at this point it's best to try to, you know, to get a good draft pick, a good draft position if you're Chicago. Prepare for the offseason. You know, again, we've been screaming it forever here inside the kitchen to blow it up. But, you know, it's the Chicago Bulls. I think they're going to make it look good in terms of their efforts and their runs. But I think it's time for the Pistons to make a postseason appearance. The Bulls and the Wizards, even the Bucks, they've had their run. So I like Pistons, Pacers, Hornets. I like how that looks. I like how that sounds. And it'd be interesting to see what the Cleveland Cavaliers could do with a team like the Detroit Pistons. You know, I saw the Detroit Pistons play that Cavaliers team pretty tough. I want to say they went into the the Gund Arena and got a big time win there. Yeah, man, I'm rolling with Detroit when it comes to that choice there between the Pistons and the Bulls. Got to go with the Pistons.
And that actually sets up for a better matchup, to be honest. Because if the Bulls were to end up, and I know that there's a, you know, no possibility for Joakim to be back and help these guys make a push. But I'm just saying, you got a guy like Drummond on the boards. I think he actually could outfight whoever is going to be in the paint with him for the boards. Those possessions count. And I think they match up well across the board except against LeBron. I think LeBron is probably the wild card in that matchup, but you're going to need LeBron to dominate that series every game, which he can, but you want to see LeBron for the longevity of the playoffs instead of, you know, trying to burn out to get past the Pistons. You know what I'm saying? So that is something that I'm looking at right now, in which when I look at the Chicago Bulls, I know that they've been injury-riddled. They brought in a coach that I don't think should have been a successor after Thibodeau, and he's not getting the best out of this team. I mean, they're hovering around 500. I mean, they could potentially fall into 500 right now, and they could look at the likes of their hometown kid, Derrick Rose, being dealt somewhere because everybody's talking about the Chicago Bulls need to get rid of Derrick Rose. That city will be in an uproar. They lose Derrick Rose. I know Jimmy Butler's been playing great basketball, but Jimmy Butler ready to carry the Bulls by itself for a full season and shoulder it as his team? I think he can, but would he want to do that without somebody in the backcourt other than, I mean, Doug McDermott? I mean, you're getting good play out of him as of late, but consistency, you haven't really seen McDermott for a full season. Are they ready to make that jump and buy into Hoiberg's system? Because let's be honest, I'm not sold on what Hoiberg is selling. I'm not sold. I think that if they get rid of some of these players off of this team, the Bulls will continue to be in the cellar until they get another big name in the middle of Chicago. But setting up for that Detroit Pistons Cleveland situation, if they are to hang on to the AFC, I actually like that 1-8 matchup. I actually like it. I don't know if I could just, you know, shoot and say Detroit will knock off Cleveland, but I like that matchup, yes.
Yeah, I'm with you. I look, again, I think the help is on the side of the Pistons versus the Bulls. And how many times have we seen Chicago and Cleveland? It's getting old right now. It's getting old. It's very old. It's not that entertaining when you're talking about the youth in Chicago that, you know, doesn't get a lot of run and it's uncertain. You know, just, again, that whole move there with, you know, the transition from Thibodeau to Hoiberg, the roster is still looking more like a Thibodeau roster, not quite a Hoiberg roster. Guys in contract years, you know, Pau Gasol trying to get paid. Derrick Rose, I mean, you know, Jekyll and Hyde, like which roles do you get from night to night? Jimmy Butler's health is really, you know, one of those situations where he could explode and have a ridiculous game, and then the next game, all of a sudden, he's out because he's playing through something. That's been his situation. Same with Taj Gibson. You know, he's playing through hamstring injuries because Powell's out and Noah's out. And Mirotić is no, he hasn't really been back yet, even though he had, when I say back, I'm talking about hit his stride, even though he had a big game the other night in terms of a points explosion. And then you got Bobby Portis, who's still not ready to assume the starter's position there at that power forward spot or the center spot, even though I think he's got, you know, a lot of potential. So when you talk 1-8 for Eastern Conference, entertainment value, a different matchup, a quality matchup, if you will. Cleveland-Detroit looks good. It sounds good. You got a couple of hard-working cities, if you will, blue-collar towns. Man, Reggie Jackson, KCP, Marcus Moore, Stanley Johnson, that young rookie is learning on the fly and playing well in spurts. Reggie Bullock, you know, he might be out again, but he was starting to contribute recently before he had went down. But it seems like he got back to practicing today. Tobias Harris, Drummond, Aaron Baines, who was with the San Antonio Spurs, so he knows a little something about winning and banging. Tolliver has contributed, you know, along the way in different stops on previous teams, as well as there in Detroit. And I just like the matchup. Because you're going to shorten the rotation. There's no one guy who's going to stop LeBron James. We know what LeBron does when it comes to postseason play. He's going to be LBJ. But to be able to throw guys with solid bodies at him and try to affect his shot, especially his shots at the basket, because I don't worry much about LeBron from the outside. He's not a super consistent guy from the outside. He's going to really kill you with the jump shot. But to be able to throw up Marcus Morris, Tobias Harris, and Stanley Johnson and Tolliver at LeBron, and then you have guys like a Drummond and Baines, you know, in the painted area trying to, you know, protect the rim or secure defensive rebounds, you know, battling against Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love, and Mozgov and things of that nature. I just think that'd be the more intriguing matchup. It could go either way because, again, Cleveland would be the team, in my opinion, Thomas, who's subject to losing a series or really struggling through a series due to injury. When you speak about Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, these guys are notorious for not being present when the teams need them most, when it's winning time. In postseason, it's winning time. And we saw it last year where Kevin is not there, Kyrie's not there, LeBron only has himself, J.R. Smith, Iman Shumpert, Tristan Thompson, Dellavedova. You know, does LeBron have another Herculean postseason running him? Should something happen to Kyrie and Kevin Love? I don't know. I like how it's setting up. I like this matchup for its entertainment value. And again, I bid everybody good health, but I like this matchup better than the Chicago Cleveland matchup, Thomas.
In the words of the Miami Heat fans, the last time the Cavaliers played the Heat in Miami, LeBron is tired. LeBron is tired. So just understand, not only do his former fans see that, the rest of the NBA sees that too. And the rest
Absolutely.
Of the NBA, they'll have some threes that'll, you know, put a body on them. And it'd be interesting if they do have one of those Morris, well, the Morris twin that'll be on them for, you know, a duration of the game. We'll have to see. And especially with guys that haven't really been in the postseason like Kyrie. I mean, Kyrie got as far as the finals, I heard, in the first game. You know, Kevin Love, I mean, he can't stay out of his own way because he's getting injured off of, you know, interesting injury after interesting injury. I don't really want to call them out because of their injuries, but, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. And just like my co-host and brother would say, you play a card, say who you are. You know what I'm saying? So I got to
right.
keep one out of his
hey.
Way.
Hey, Thomas,
go
I know we're talking about the East, but real quick, let me throw this at you, man. It just, you know, came across my timeline. You know, the Pelicans announced that Anthony Davis underwent surgery today, and he's out 3 to 4 months. And, you know, the New Orleans Pelicans are here in town playing the Indiana Pacers. And the scoreboard is pretty accurate right now. It looks like the score is 87-77.
Mm-hmm.
So, your thoughts on what's happening with Anthony Davis, his career, his career's trajectory. I mean, is this guy in this situation, is he – I'm not going to say he's Sam Bowie. He's obviously not Sam Bowie, but is he – you know, on that he's not Bill Walton. I mean, Bill Walton had to deal with a lot of injuries – you know, to his feet, his knees, his back. He dealt with a lot of pain his whole career. But Walton was able to win a championship in 77. We know he won that chip with the Celtics in the mid-80s there. But just, I'm trying to figure out, like, who's this guy kind of comparable to and, like, where's his career going? You know, is he going to ever really get going, get started and maintain and build up some steam and really roll along? Because right now you have to be concerned about your investment in Anthony Davis, Thomas.
This is very tough on the scenarios that I'm going to go through, but I'm going to try. And the first scenario, I can't really compare Anthony to this guy because I think Anthony is better than him as of now, and his career will probably be better than this guy. But the injuries that this guy suffered is similar to the injuries that the guy that I'm about to announce, and me being a Connecticut guy, Vin Baker. I don't know if people know who Vin Baker was, a guy out of Connecticut, big man. Me being a Sonic fan, he went to Seattle, was getting hurt left and right. Even while he was in Milwaukee, he was getting injured as well. And people thought a lot of Vin Baker, but it didn't translate to him being on the floor because you didn't know if he was going to be available to go out there and give you a go. You know, so I look at it in that comparison. I mean, I could think of other bigs that have, you know, had injury-riddled careers and, you know, seeing the short end of the stick while people thought that their careers would probably end up lasting longer. They basically just, you know, put a rope on their career and walked away from the game before it got even worse. So I thought the Vin Baker comparison, but not even to compare them as players, because I definitely think Anthony Davis has a leg up on him, even as of now, and didn't even play as many years as Vin Baker did as of yet. But the situation that I look at with the New Orleans Pelicans, and it's getting personal for me with all of the stuff that I'm hitting on, but it's getting personal. I have to use another sport, and that's football. I look at Anthony Davis and compare him to Calvin Johnson. You have a megastar. I'm not even saying a superstar. You have a megastar, and Anthony Davis can go out there, get rebounds, could score, gave you a 59-21 game, could block shots. A lot of people don't like to jump around being in the paint. This guy had guard capability because that 10-inch growth spurt happened while he was a guard in high school. Like, so he still knows what to do with the ball. But I look at him in comparison to Calvin because you want him to go out there and shoot the ball from the perimeter, add more to his game, go out there and still play the basketball that he knows how to play. You got him overexerting himself on defense up against the bigs in the Western Conference. You make it seem like he's not seeing stud after stud on a nightly basis, and you're asking him to go out there and do more. And then to ice the cake, what talent are you surrounding him with? Even with the injuries that they have, what talent is really there? I mean, I'm actually you know, nagging off of Tyreek Evans and not even talk about his injury, but you got Tyreek, you got Drew Holiday, who I respect, but Drew's not consistent. You got these games, or Eric Gordon, another injury-prone player. You got Omar Sheik, another injury-prone player. You look at their benches like, am I scratching my head hard enough for y'all to look at this? For management, put somebody around them. Y'all gave his contract up to himself where he could soak up so much he can't really get attention away from him. So you put him in this scenario. Just like Calvin Johnson ended up retiring. Not to say that Anthony Davis is going to retire. If Anthony Davis retires within the next 3 to 4 years, I'd be stunned. But if he gets injured again the next time he comes on the floor in the 2016-2017 season off of a minimal injury or him overexerting himself, you got to ask yourself these questions. These all come into play. They just dumped over $130-plus million into this guy over a five-year span. Over a five-year span, you put this much money into him. Like, are you thinking about that? I don't know. I just don't know. So this is where I draw the line on Anthony Davis. You know, him being in the Western Conference, I don't like him because he's in the conference that I love. But, you know, analytically, what we do here in the kitchen, I love what this guy does on the floor. I love it. I don't want to see him off the floor. Like, and that's honest. I'm being wholeheartedly honest. I love what Anthony Davis does on the floor, but I don't want to see him out, you know, out for three games, out for 2 weeks, out for 3 weeks. Like, come on, man. Then you start to build up the mystique. Oh, is he an injury-prone player? Which that title is going to sit in front of him until you see a full 82-game season played by him. It's going to continue to stay by him regardless.
No doubt. Thomas, you know, I'm going to say this real. I'm going to try to be as quick as I possibly can. All these points, man. Anthony Davis, 64 games, 67 games, 68, and this season, 61. You are who your player card says you are. He is a big-time talent. He's a guy that's 24-10 over the last two seasons with two assists, 2 to 3 blocks, 1.5 steals. His career is 52% from the field, 78% from the free throw line. He just started to add the three ball this season. He's still not taking a lot. He's only taking 1.8 threes per game, shooting at 32%. So he's still not really a three-point shooter or whatever, anything like that. But when you look at his totals, whenever his season comes to an end, he puts up numbers, okay, in limited time. So if there's really a better comparison, I know I threw out the names of some bigs because Anthony Davis is a legitimate 6'10 guy, but he draws a better comparison to one Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo was in a similar situation. He's in the city, the franchise, when he started his career with Denver, who didn't really have much of anything. You're asked to come in, be the savior, be the franchise guy, get this team to the promised land, do all the heavy lifting, and the burden to bear is just too heavy. It's just too much. You can't lift it. You can't carry it. Your body, you know, with the style of play and the fact that they're not really providing anything for you that could really complement your game in terms of help and guys that could help carry the load, it's a breakdown. And Melo would break down, and when you look at Carmelo Anthony and the numbers he would average and the totals numbers for each season, you would like, man, these are actually end-of-the-year numbers. The dude's putting up ridiculous numbers. Like, if he could do a full 82 games at those numbers, you'd be talking about multiple MVPs. Because of their ability to score the ball, rebound, contribute in assists and things like that. Like, first of all, you know, I hate to spend too much time on Carmelo, but this guy doesn't get enough credit. You need to go check his player card and go look at his totals. Don't look at his average. Look at the totals and what he's accomplished in limited games played each season. And then you come back to Anthony Davis. It's a similar situation. And a lot of guys, you know, he's gotten so much combo, mostly in his height, because of the fantasy basketball, you know, thing, you know, just the potential. I mean, you know, a guy his size with the ability to, you know, shoot at a high level, touch every category and all that kind of stuff in a positive way. And people would say, you know, you got to take Anthony Davis, you know, a top pick, and that's where he was kind of sitting in recent seasons. But then the emergence of Steph Curry, it's like, do you go Curry, do you go Davis? Well, hands down, you can't pick Anthony Davis, you know, within the top five anymore, period. I'll be the first to say, you know me, you know my name. If you don't, Google it, Royce King, Roto Experts. I do work, you know, all I do is win. Bottom line, Anthony Davis, I could never select Anthony Davis at this point within the top five. I can't. I don't care who takes who and who leaves what. And especially if I have the number one overall pick, he will not be my first player taken off the board because you are not available. I need availability. I need games played. The best chance at winning anything is your player be available to participate and have a greater chance of finishing games started, okay? Anthony Davis, you know, he's showing he'll start 60-some games, but he won't finish them all. He hasn't even gotten to 70. We ain't even going to talk 82. Get to 70, damn it. You can't get to 70. 82? Look, this organization has to figure out how to use Anthony Davis. They wanted to, you know, put him out on the perimeter and have him shooting a bunch of threes. I don't think he needs to shoot a bunch of threes, but as you mentioned, he was a guard before that growth spurt that made him a 6'10 big man. Defensively, obviously, he's going to be you want him close to the basket to help with rim protection. But I think on the offensive end, they're starting to figure out you got to let this guy be a big guard. You know, a la, you know, Kevin Durant. He doesn't have the same gait and the fluidity of movement and motion in terms of his stride and all that, but he's got a pretty reliable pick-and-pop jumper. You know, he's got the jab step, and I think he's working on those things because he realizes he can't handle the banging. There's also been talks of, let's figure out how to maybe possibly redistribute the weight in his body, but look, this guy has injuries everywhere, all types of different kind of injuries. It's not like the same issue, the same thing over and over again. He's just injury prone, and that's unfortunate. So I would temper my expectations when it comes to Anthony Davis. I agree with you. You got to blow that roster up. They're carrying too many guys whose names are synonymous with injuries and not being available and not being a winning brand of basketball, the Tyreek Evans, the Eric Gordons, the Ryan Andersons, Drew Holiday. You gotta move those pieces. And I don't know who's going to buy and for how much, but you got to figure out how to move those pieces if you're going to continue to invest heavily in Anthony Davis. And you have to come up with a new style of play that can protect him for the most part in terms of his health. And get right and make sure that this guy, you know, they even spoke about the training staff. They're considering, you know, firing those people because so many people are often injured. You know, they're going down. So, you know, get it right, New Orleans. You have a superstar talent. It's obvious. He's a superstar talent. This guy has the talent. No-brainer situation, but until – we can see it proven on the floor in terms of his durability and his health and finishing seasons and all of that. You know, man, buyer beware if you're doing the fantasy thing. And if you're a Pelicans fan, you got to be, you know, like I said, send emails, tweet about it, get the GM there, make some moves. You got to get him to make some moves because this isn't working. But that's the latest, man, on AD in the news.
Yeah, and the crazy part is, the pieces that are around them, who's going to want to trade for them? Who wants Eric Gordon, honestly? He can shoot the bubble. Who wants him? Honest. Tyreek Evans, who wants him? Honest. Omer Sy, Kendrick Perkins, Ryan Anderson may be the only piece that you can move that you might get some quality back for. But you want to keep Ryan Anderson with Anthony Davis because these two are in tandem together, at least how I feel. That's how I feel. Like, why separate that when they actually work together? Like, that's the only player I can think of on that roster that may have some value that you could get out of the league to bring back another quality player to put alongside him. Especially with the money that you soaked up into him. You can't even really entice somebody to come there. You can't.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep falling. That's all I can say. Keep falling in the standings and try to get below Minnesota. They just took an L tonight to the Pacers. Miles Turner went for 24-16. You got to draft. You got to draft well. You got to find a steal somewhere.
Okay, well, Breaking news, people, breaking news. We already have tears of flowing in the Sweet 16. We'll probably be hearing from Tommy tomorrow. Villanova beats the mess out of Miami, 92-69. Now, you already hear him coming to the kitchen talking about ACC this, ACC that, and screw the Big East. They beat them by 23 damn points in the Sweet 16. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say. I'll just take one to get to the doggone kitchen. They beat them by 23 points. But Miami lose, they lose bad. They lose bad. North Carolina beat them by like 30-something. They just lost to Villanova like that. Look, I'm going to just save it for them. I just want to say shout-out to the youth for getting to the Sweet 16. I love you in college football. But college basketball, this boy's been talking about my Hoyas like a wet food stand. Like I'm not having it. So y'all will hear that. Oklahoma and Texas A&M. Oklahoma's up 17 with 8-plus minutes left. Buddy Hield and them are going crazy as of now, unless Texas A&M gets a late-game surge. Well, I'm going to keep a close eye on that, too. Now, I am going to go to the Western Conference, and, of course, it's almost like I'm talking about the Lakers of the past couple of years here in Sports City, but I'm not talking about the Lakers. I'm not. Like, I'm done with talking about Kobe and the farewell tour and how terrible they look and, you know, how I didn't like Kobe, but now I feel bad for him, so on and so forth. I'm talking about the Houston doggone Rockets and the Utah Jazz. Now, Utah is actually in a game right now up against a team that I love. Y'all know Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City's up at halftime, but anything can happen. Utah's fighting for this eighth spot. Now, Royce, I want to know how you feel about this eighth and ninth spot. Utah just took the lead on Houston by beating them last night with a play that was so crucial that, here we go again, James Harden does not want to play defense. And this is starting to become an epic reoccurring sentence or phrase that you throw out there, Harden not playing D. Well, him not playing D actually cost them, and Dwight had to step up in the paint and make a play, and Favors was wide open under the rim for an easy dunk because Dwight had to leave him because Harden's man was coming straight down the chimney. Now, I don't know how you feel about this Rockets team, but I'm trying to hang on. And even when you got Sirius coming in the kitchen talking junk about Oklahoma City, and I try my best not to trash the Rockets because my cousin that passed on was a Rockets fan, and I just know the history of the Rockets between the Sonics back in the day, so I respect them, you know, Hakeem, all of them. But looking how bad it has gotten since they got rid of Kevin McHale, they got Bickerstaff, like that was the move to make. Bickerstaff is a young coach that they're trying to put in the realm of things, and I don't think he has any control. I think this car is rolling downhill with no brakes, no brakes at all. You got the Stickum situation that's being covered up, Dwight and James Harden's altercation that they're having, how they don't get along. It's looking like Dwight may end up going somewhere else. Your thoughts on if Houston could get this thing right. If they don't, Utah is the AC, point blank, period.
Well, it's interesting, Thomas. You know, I'm looking at that bottom up there on the West, and it's a fight, man. And look, we're talking Utah and Houston, but I got my eye on the Trailblazers, who are 37-35. They're 4-6 over their last 10. I'm definitely watching this Dallas Mavericks team struggle. They're 2-8 over their last 10 games, and they're actually tied with the Utah Jazz. Utah is the only team that's above 500 that we're going to speak about in this scenario here. They're 7-3 over the last 10, and the Houston Rockets are at 500. They're 5-5. So you got three teams with 35 wins, two out of three with 36 losses, and the Rockets with 37 losses. That was a big game between the Jazz and the Rockets, and the Jazz looked exactly like the team that I want to speak about in terms of they're young, okay, but they're well coached. They have some stability in that organization, they know where they're trying to go, how they're going to get there, who their core pieces are, who they're playing through. They have anchors in that painted area. They make it difficult to score buckets in the paint. They have some guys on that perimeter, man, who can shoot with the best of them when they get hot. They have an emerging player. A lot of people talk about Gordon Hayward and his playmaking ability, and they view him as the closer on the perimeter. But I actually view Rodney Hood as the new up-and-coming closer on that perimeter for that team, a la James Harden. He's left-handed. He's watching and he's studying a lot of film on the one we call Jimmy Beard here in the kitchen. And his confidence is growing. That you bring in Shelvin Mack to man the point, you reunite him with Gordon Hayward and what they accomplished in the NCAA tournament at Butler University. So there's comfort level there. He's a pass-first type guy. He just knows how to make winning plays. Not a great shooter, but he hits some big shots. And he's not afraid of the moment. He's not afraid to be clutch. You have a young talent, a blue chipper, if you will, and Trey Lyles, who's learning, and you still haven't seen the best of what he has to offer because he's a rookie, and they are so deep there. You got a veteran in Trevor Booker. I just like this Utah Jazz team and this makeup. I expect them to get in. They could be as high as 6. They could be as low as 8, but I do not expect them to be on the outside looking in. Things are looking pretty shaky-bakey for the Mavericks right now. They could fall out. And the Houston Rockets, they're Jekyll and Hyde, and that's what's so crazy. They have uber talent. You know what I'm saying? They're a talented team. When you talk about James Harden, Dwight Howard, Josh Smith, Michael Beasley, Corey Brewer, Patrick Beverley, Donatas Montiunas, you just got guys who knows, man, they could just like one day all of a sudden get it going and run off a string of wins like they did last season. I think they still struggle, however, in terms of the coaching department. I was never, a big fan of Kevin McHale as a head coach, but I still think Kevin McHale is a better coach than J.B. Bickerstaff.
By far.
And so that's where, things, could fall apart. So it comes down to the players. The players have to play. The players have to come together. Someone has to step up and provide on-court leadership. I don't know if that's going to be Jason Terry. He's an older, veteran player. It needs to be a guy like James Harden. I don't think Dwight Howard cares enough at this point about what happens or doesn't happen in Houston. I think he's already looking forward to the summer and his ETO, early termination option, and finding a new home, a new taker that might be suitable to his skill set at this point of his career. But in the meantime, this race is so wide open. Why not play for some extra paychecks? Why not get the dough? Why not be able to say, okay, this is what we've done over the last 2 or 3 seasons as a franchise in terms of the Houston Rockets. We made the postseason. We gave it a good go. We gave whoever a real series, a contest. We were a tough out. There can be only one. 29 other teams lost. We're not the only one who took a L in terms of, not being the champion. It's a whole lot that you could sell your city on over and over again, but that's sports, right? But this Rockets team, man, they're the Clippers. They're just like the Clippers. It's not real. It's not real. They just come on, man. It doesn't work. We talked about it. Harden and Howard. It looked good for a moment. They attempted to fool us early on when they first came together in the conversation. It was hype. It put spotlight on the city of Houston and on that Rockets franchise, the light was shining brightly on both players. But then they had to lace up and play together, and then they realized it's oil and water, oil and vinegar, whatever it is, that separates. Okay.
They all don't mix.
No. So, without it mixing, without it being, something that works well together, man, it doesn't matter. I don't want to see the Rockets. I don't even want to see the Mavericks. I'm disappointed that we won't see a team like the Sacramento Kings and DeMarcus Cousins. But it is what it is. Players, if you're not ready, if you don't have help on your side, if you can't get right, if you will, this is what happens. You find yourself on the outside looking in, And by default, sometimes other guys get an opportunity. The Dallas Mavericks refuse to die. They're not the San Antonio Spurs, but they're like the Spurs. When you think about how long their franchise player has been in the league, how long he's been carrying that franchise and management, you know, this is why, you know, you realize that, Thomas, man, this stuff has a lot to do with the organization and people in the front office. They keep retooling and retooling to be competitive. And when you want to write them off and say they're not even going to make the playoffs, they find a way to stay in the top eight. That's the Mavericks. They're trying to figure out how to stay in the top eight. They had enough room, right, to fall to 2-8 over the last 10 and still not be out of the picture. Kudos to them, because they invested in a bunch of Band-Aid guys. They invested in rejects. No one wanted Raymond Felton. No one really wanted Darren Williams. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
How many people really came calling for Chandler Parsons? Who wanted Wesley Matthews after the Achilles injury? Not before the Achilles, because a lot of people wanted him then, but who wanted him after? You know what I'm saying? Like, this, you know, great coaching, great ownership, management, Nelson, you know, making deals and all that kind of stuff, man. Investing in a young talent like Dwight Powell, see what he can do when he gets his opportunity, which is not right now, obviously. You draft Justin Anderson, you know, but they still got a question mark. They're not going to win it. They're pretenders too, but they're good enough to get a top eight seed. It's crazy. Just the state of the league.
That's true. I'm going to say this quickly. I'd rather Utah make it than here's why. Defense. Reason being, okay, everybody talks about Dwight Howard being a shot blocker. Dwight don't want to be in there blocking shots, man. You can tell. He lets a lot of people finish at the rim while he's there. And then you got guys like James Harden, like Jason Terry, like Josh Smith, who all play, Ole defense, let people go to the lane, and funnel them to Dwight and hope Dwight can catch these guys throwing up a floater or a layup so he can get tested. Other than that, Dwight don't have no means to protect that rim or that goal. This is all a bad mesh. Seeing Houston get into the postseason, I know everybody wants to see James Harden. I do too. I love James Harden. I ain't going to lie. I'm still mad that the Thunder let him go. But the opportunity of him on defense, it just bothers me now. It bothers me that he has an 11-minute video on him not playing defense. Like, you want to see him at the AC play Golden State? Really? I don't. I don't want to see that. I don't. I'm sorry. Okay. Look, we are at the tail end of the show, and I have more to go, but I want to see some of this basketball be played also. And two, one of the topics that I did have, we didn't even get to Sports City and people out there listening, because y'all making a big deal about LeBron setting up the super team. You know how I think about this? It's whack. And I bet you LeBron looking at it whack too. And if they do make that move, I will lose all respect for all four of them. All four of them. I could care less if Dwayne Wade won 3 rings. I will care. I will lose respect for all four of them. Because you didn't see Michael Jordan hit up Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and Charles Barkley say, you know what, come to Chicago with me and Pip. We're going to run the show. Y'all don't got no heart, no guts. We're going to master up a team like there's a pickup game, and I take a pay cut. LeBron take a pay cut. You get paid $90 million from Nike, dog. Like money hurt you. Like, you worried about money. You made that sound like you worried about money or something. Like, stop. Look, it's whack. I'm glad that I get to close out the show like this. I ain't even giving Royce this topic. I won't even feed him that crap. I won't. But I'm glad that I get to do it like that, because everybody else, all y'all on the network throwing out their old pictures of Super Mega Team. Stop. Royce, you already know what to do around this time, man. Plug, close out, shout out, and we shut it down here at the cafe.
Man, you know, look, I'm glad we did what we do. Right here, Inside Sports City, every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Crossover Cafe, Master Chef Edition. Follow me on Twitter, at @RoyceKing _. That is Royce King. I am he. It's been a pleasure. I'm out.
And that's my big brother, man. Been years with this dude. That's what I'm talking about. Ride or die. And I can talk this basketball forever. I showed you bottom feeders. I could do this. I even put the point guard up against Curry, and y'all ain't think that I could do it. Y'all ain't think CP3 and Russ could make this type of argument. I love it. I love it. Because I could actually throw all of these names together, Russ, CP3, and Curry, and say what one doing more than the other. Only thing Curry got on everybody is that his team winning. Is it most valuable team or is it most valuable player? Let's go. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interview, the blog, the chef. We'll be right back here tomorrow evening, roundtabling things up because we got a lot to talk about. RG3 in Cleveland, some tears that will be spilling. Oklahoma looking like they're going to hang on. I'm going to be talking Buddy Hield. I wanted to talk about some of that college basketball here, but me and my brother, we can do this for hours, man. We can do this for two of us. We can do this for hours, man. I'm comfortable with my family. I'm sorry. On that note, tell a friend that it's the chef again, and if they don't know, now they know.
New York, Jersey, Philly, Baltimore, D.C., Virginia, Atlanta, everybody, rock!
Every day comes from a place.